welcome our speaker tonight. Steve Ell comes all the way down three high-speed exits from the turnpike in Tannersville.
All right, Steve.
Hi, everyone. I'm Steve. I'm an alcoholic.
I
don't know what I'm going to say. It's probably a good thing. I learned a long time ago that, you know, there was a guy who would talk about the meeting before the meeting at the meeting, and the meeting after the meeting, you know, and whenever you had a speaking commitment. And you know, I used to spend a lot of time thinking about stuff. If I knew I had a commitment, especially if it was like a week or so beforehand or more, I'd start thinking about, you know, where I'm at, what I'm going to say, what's going on, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I used to do that stuff. And I'm glad it stopped because I guess, as you guys know, any of you who've had this experience, you get up here and everything that's up there just went somewhere else anyway, you know what I mean? And you end up talking and then you're driving home and afterwards you're thinking about things you should have said and all that other kind of jazz. So I'm glad that's gone. You know, it's been gone for a while. I don't have that. So I do have a home group. I'm glad they asked me to come down here and speak. It's always a privilege and an honor for me to try to do something for AA or try to carry a message, experience, and hope. This particular group here, 10 years ago or so, we ended up coming down here, and it was like a beacon for me at the time. You know, where I was in AA at that time, I was not, I had some years of sobriety and then I had gone back out and I was back in AA, still drinking, trying to figure out why I couldn't stay stopped drinking. And, I ran into some people who showed up. I think God pretty much just brought them into my life more, you know, more, it's no coincidence. And, you know, we ended up down here, and they were sharing some experiences and some hope and some of the stuff in ways that I wasn't hearing where I was at, you know, and it kind of opened my eyes to something different, to something new. And, you know, eventually I was able to get some time where I managed to get sober and stay that way. My sobriety date is December 26, 2012, you know, right after Christmas. But not my first sobriety date, obviously. You know, I've been coming around these rooms since I was 16, which was a while ago. I date myself, but we're talking, you know, 90s era. Kurt Cobain was like, you know, my idol at the time. I had long hair down here, you know, piercings, you know, I would just pierce stuff, you know, take like pins and stick them through my eyebrows. And, you know, you had pants that you could fit two legs in each one and whole, you know, just the whole, I showed up a little rough. And even at that time, I needed this, you know, I didn't understand it. I didn't know what it was. I mean, I believe back then I showed up in AA and I was doing all kinds of things. I was drinking a lot. I mean, I'm a straight up alcoholic right out of the gate. Realistically, there was no period of time where there was control and enjoy that much or anything. Like, I just straight up, you know, I'd get up in the morning and drink 12 shots of gin and try to get on the bus without falling down too much before I got there and get pulled aside in school, go to the guidance counselor, in drug and alcohol classes and therapy when I was in high school. And it's just how I rolled out the gate. You know, that's how I showed up. And I was hurting when I showed up here. And I remember, you know, and I showed up in AA because of a girl, realistically. I mean, it wasn't my, you know, God was planting the seeds back then, you know, but what led me into the rooms was a girl. And I said, you know, I could really do this. And it felt good. It felt good to be sober, be clean for a little while. I didn't quite understand what y'all were talking about with this stuff. I kind of understood, all right, you got to get a sponsor and or some guy. So I found an old guy who looked like he wouldn't bother me too much. He was really nice, and I made him my sponsor. And I sat around in meetings and talked about how sorry I felt about myself and my situation. And but I felt pretty good, you know. My plan was, got some money in the bank. Now got a job. I'm going to finish school, I'm going to go to college, I'm going to do all this stuff. You know, the girl went out of the picture, and my friends hated me too. I just still stuck around with my friends. I mean, it's a really tough thing when you're still in high school and you're trying to go into AA meetings and stay away from your friends. Like, they hated me because they were all walking around drinking and getting high, and I was like talking about how great I felt, and they were like, get away from us, you know. And eventually I ran into some other girl that I kind of liked, and she liked vodka. And it would be 12 years until I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous again, you know, really beaten up, you know, and beaten up pretty badly. You know, I always remember one thing they said in AA, and it was, you gotta hit a bottom, right? That's the thing that stuck with me, and I brought that with me. You know, when I'd be, I'm working this job, and I'm living in apartments, and, of course I always have like a job where the guy who runs the restaurant or the hotel I'm working at will put you up somewhere, you know? And, I just remember drinking around the clock at that point in time and, you know, get up, go out to my car, open up the trunk, take a couple of shots, you know, fill up my flask because I needed to bring that in to work with me. And I just remember standing out in the parking lot, staring out into nothing one day and thinking, when is this bottom going to come? You know, that's how it was. It wouldn't be that much longer at that point, but, you know, when you think back about alcoholism, I didn't know much about it. It's all in hindsight now through going through a lot of work and a lot of self-examination and, you know, some therapy and some other things that have been in the mix over years to kind of take a look back at the kind of person that I was and what alcohol did for me. Because for a while I was in, you know, when I showed back up in Alcoholics Anonymous in 2005, I pretty much was thought, I wasn't aware it's what I thought, but I did think that alcohol was pretty much the problem. Figured, take away the alcohol, get life back together, everything will be all well. And I'd make tons of meetings. I mean, because by the time I was done drinking, I was the, you know, gallon of vodka a day, blackout drinker, waking up at God only knows what time and where, on the floor. You know, this is how I was showing up in hospitals, basically weekly, detoxes. They're trying to get me into treatment centers. I had no insurance. So this is where I showed up. And, you know, I desperately wanted to get sober and stay sober. I desperately wanted to be happy. And it was the first time in maybe 12 years that I'd had no alcohol in me or nothing else in me for long. And I felt pretty good. I don't know. People might refer to it as like a pink cloud. Some people refer to it as God's grace, you know, to have an opportunity to be separated from alcohol for a considerable period and kind of get your mind back a little bit. And, you know, the first thing that looks good to me is getting stuff back, you know. I must have drove like 20-something odd different cars. None of them were ever legal. You know, and I don't even know if I could have gotten them legal. Like, I don't even know if I didn't have a license or just didn't bother to want to get one. You know, so I would just buy $500 cars from the Puerto Rican guy that I knew down the road. He'd steal some plates from somewhere, slap some stickers on, and I'm good to go for a month or two until it died on me, and then it's the next one. So this is the way I'm living. So starting to get some things back, you know, not having, you know, a legal car, All right, registration, cool. Job, a little bit of money, place to live, parents talking to me again, people beginning to trust me, starting to be able to think a little bit clearly, starting to get some ambition about doing stuff, getting back into, you know, I never graduated high school, part of my story. It's an interesting part of my story because I found out years later that I lied to myself about what the real story was. You know, the story that I like to tell was that I was drinking so much during high school. Like, I'd go in, I'd not go to my homeroom class, and I would not register in. So then I could go to the classes I wanted to, and then I would just leave. And I would go home and get drunk, or I'd go to the park, and I'd drink, and I'd pass out, whatever. So by the near end of my senior year, the school says something about you missed like 80 some odd days of school. You need to, you know, and we're sorry, you know, you're not going to be able to graduate. And at that point I said, screw it. You know, I'm working. I got a job. I'm going to make a lot. You know, I mean, this is where I'm at. So I'm talking about this. Oh gosh, this had to be like a year ago. Maybe a little over a year ago. And my mom is in the car. So I'm telling this story, we're talking about it, she goes, no. That's not what happened. She goes, yeah, no, that's not what happened. She says, the school gave you the opportunity to come to school every day for the next 6 weeks, stay and stay late and finish all your work and graduate, and you said, F that. You know, but my story sounded a lot better, I thought. So, but this is the kind of stuff, and I kind of look back as some of the truth, you know, unveils itself after, you know, time goes by. So this is the kind of drinking I'm doing, and when I'm showing up, I had my eyes on the prize on things in life. You know, it talks about in our third step, it mentions, you know, the delusion. The delusion is that if I can manage, you know, my life well, that everything will be great. You know, if I can get everything into place, if I can get a decent job and maybe have some health benefits, you know, the girlfriend, always got to be one of those in there. You know, I got to get the girlfriend, car that's legal, back to school, getting my GED, did very well with my GED. I went, took classes and graduated from that. I got to speak at the college and like all this great stuff. And, I was making a lot of meetings and I was kind of doing some of the step work, sort of. You know, I like to listen to a lot of things I hear at meetings, and one of the things I showed up with is that my MO too is always been, what's the easiest way to get from here to here? You know, what's the least amount of stuff I can do to get there? You know, what kind of shortcuts can I take? You know, and making a lot of meetings, I tend to have selective hearing. And my selective hearing like to pick up on things like, well, you work your program and they work their program. You know, do what works for you and leave the rest. I love that one. I can swallow that, you know what I mean? Because I'll do what's comfortable for me and I'll leave what's not comfortable, is what that means, really. You know, you don't have to make all your amends, you know. Others is you, Steve, so you want to leave that out, you know, yeah, that eliminated a lot of amends, you know. My first round of amends that I did make on my own, right, under my own direction, and this is the shocker, right, I call up every single ex-girlfriend I have, and I meet them one by one to tell them how good I'm doing today and how sorry I am about things that happened, and how are you? That's how that went. You know, there was no, how can we make this better? Do you want to talk to me about something? Like, I didn't have that. You know, I just, I did. I took it all on my own, and you know what? I got some things out of. I did write a life story of all the terrible things that I did. There's this big long story of all the sins and everything, and you know, it was just don't do that stuff anymore, right? Just don't do it, you know. And took it out and burned it, you know, that old deal. And I did get some things out, but I'll tell you what. Somewhere around 3 years, I was feeling some kind of way. I was feeling like something is really missing. There's a big piece of something missing in all of this. And if you looked at my actions and looked at what I was doing from the outside, you might have thought, what's wrong with this guy? You know, getting connected with the girl who, against everyone's suggestions and advice, starts relapsing and drinking again, and I'm sticking in with it, right? We're gonna make this work. I'm subjecting myself to, she's a Jekyll and Hyde, right? She's the type, come in, 2 o'clock in the morning, rip the sheets off the bed, start screaming at you, you know? But this works. You know, so I'm living with my grandmother. I get fired from my job for what they called exposure of inside of operations, which I just thought it was fun at the time, which is, you know, I got my hands on a video camera, decided to make some movies. I worked in a casino in the back of, and we had this huge kitchen, and so I would just go around and make movies of all this stuff. I decided it was a great idea, put it up online, share it with people. The things that I was doing were very questionable, and it's kind of funny, because if you're not really held accountable to what you're doing, you don't think there's anything wrong. You know, there's nothing wrong with me living with my grandmother, hoping that my girlfriend maybe gets her stuff together so we can go back on about our life and our merry way. And I still felt like there was a piece missing. I remember talking to the guy that I had as a sponsor at the time, who I talked to once in a while, and I said, I need to talk to somebody else. And he said, yeah, go ahead. And I never did that, you know. By the time it came around to wanting to talk to somebody, I found a guy, and he'd say, well, what do you think about meeting on Sunday at this place? And I would say, yeah, Sunday, not good for me, you know. I haven't drank in all this time or anything else. I'm good. I'm going to be all right. You know, I would hear things at meetings, and that here's the stuff that I would pick up. We're alcoholics. We think about drinking. It's natural. We do it all the time. It's a natural thing. And I go, yeah, that's me. I think about it all the time. I pull up into the liquor store, right, into the parking lot. I'd look at the liquor store, and I'd sit there for 20 minutes, and I would not go in eventually. And then I'd leave, and I'd pat myself on the back and say, man, you did a good job. You know, and I wouldn't tell anyone about it either. Talk about pride. You know, pride, my number one character defect, is very tough. You know, I struggled really trying to stay clean and sober, because pride and ego is huge. What I think others think of me, how I think you'll see me, view me, like me, love me, judge me, big for me. You know, get some time together and talk about how things aren't going very well, or how you're thinking about doing things that maybe you shouldn't be thinking about doing. That's difficult for a guy like me. I don't want to share. I want to look good. I want everyone to think I'm all well. You know? If you don't think I'm well, you're going to think something's wrong with me, man, you know? Pride is huge. You know, and I had to learn a lot of things the hard way. And you know, I was blessed to run into these people that I talked about that brought me down. I don't know how we ended up connecting with people down here, but we did. And they were the, at the time, they were pretty big book thumping. You know, they were, sit on the couch. When you're done getting sick, let's get busy. You know, and they did that for me several times. And I didn't know anyone else who really did that kind of stuff. So what was kind of amazing is, like, you know, I get to tons of meetings, and I've been to tons of speaker meetings and discussion meetings, and, you know, I avoided tradition meetings for a long time because being selfish and self-centered and not having any like spiritual awakening yet. I want to talk about me and my stuff. I don't want to hear about this stuff. I don't care about it. You know, that's confusing to me. And what happened is I got to see the program in action. I'm one of those guys, too, that's like, man, you can talk and talk and talk, but unless I see the walk, it's all talk. You know, my mom used to tell me, don't smoke, don't drink, but mom, you're drinking wine and you're smoking cigarettes. So this kind of thinking, this kind of stuff developed a long time. I don't trust that what you say is what you do. I don't trust that. So having this experience, living with these guys, watching them holding meetings weekly outside, bringing people in, putting them on the couch, bringing people in every day, day after day, sitting at the table, going through the big book, making amends to the neighbors after the neighbors cursed out their children. I went, who does that? You know, but what I got to see was this program in action, and what that started in me was the reality that this is a real thing. I got to watch this stuff practice. And it was the first time where this became something very real for me. You know, and going through the big book, like no one ever brought me through that. I remember I'd been around for years and years, and my sponsor at the time had said, have you done the steps? I said, absolutely. I've done the steps, of course. You know, and I'd mention the 12 and 12, and he would say, no. He'd say, have you done the steps? I said, did the 12 and 12. We went through, I read it all the time. He says, so you've danced around the step room. So he'd say, I don't understand what he's saying. He'd opened up the big book for me, and he started reading. He says, have you done the things that it talks about doing in here? And I said, nope. And he says the thing that a guy like me needs to hear is something of the nature of, well, if you haven't done what it says in here, then I don't want to hear what you have to say about anything. Because this is an experiential thing, and if you haven't done these things that are in here, you don't have anything to talk about. So, okay. You know, and this began to become an experiential thing. You know, I got the one I love to use, which I had gotten from my sponsors at the time, is I don't care that much about what you think of me. I care more about whether you live or die. You know, so I'll tell you the truth about how I see what's going on with you. I still get that all the time too, you know. I still get that from them because I have, you know, I still have a network of people around me that know me so well that they know when I'm not telling the truth. They know when I'm trying to get by. They know when something's wrong. It's first thing, what's going on with you? Nothing? Really? Tell me what nothing looks like. Yeah. All right. Yeah. That was good for that. Nothing. Everything's good, right? Great. How you doing today? Good. Good. Everything's good. Yeah. We're very, very good for that line. And things began to change for me. It's been a weird couple of weeks. I feel like I'm in a weird space. Right now, I wasn't, you know, usually I feel a little more ecstatic and like filled with some kind of life, and it's kind of drained right now, you know, and I feel like I'm in a weird place, and I've had to, my grandfather had passed a couple of weeks ago, and so I decided to take a trip down to Tennessee. You know, we're taking a trip down to Tennessee, where my grandfather is. Gonna have a funeral, all that kind of stuff. And my grandfather was kind of like the pinnacle of the family, you know. And in my family, everybody lived very far apart. We didn't get to see each other that much. So, family's all together. We're in Tennessee. And I began to learn a little bit of more about my grandfather through this experience, you know. And man, you know, especially at the funeral and the viewing, like my grandfather was a great man, right? He flew B-24 bombers. He was a flight instructor. He worked for the FAA, right, for years and years. He helped lots of people. Everybody in town loved him. He was this guy who would show up at your house. And all these people had come, and they had all these great stories and all these great things to say about him. And in the midst of this, I'm feeling this big wall of self-pity start to come in, right? Just out of nowhere. And I'm thinking, gosh, look at his life, man. My life sucked. Like, what happened to me? You know? This is what's showing up. And I'm thinking, and all kinds of things started to spin with this, you know, and I'm thinking, gosh, your young grandfather had a lot of children, and I don't have anybody. I don't have any children. I'm not even married. Jeez, I'm 40. I don't even have my own place yet. Who's going to take care of me when I get old? You know, like, here's the thought process starting to take off, right? And I do forget, though, often that my great-grandfather was a moonshiner, you know, that my grandfather used to drive around when he was 12 years old as they sold booze and played cards. So you'd see a picture of my great-grandfather, and he'd be leaning up against a tree with the mason jar like this. That was my great-grandfather. So not that any genealogy has anything to do with it or that it matters. But the point is, this kind of thought started rolling through, you know, and I really enjoyed being with my family. I love my family to death. You know, I'm a crier when I leave my family. I just have to admit that. Every time I leave my mother, I bawl for like 20 minutes as I'm driving down the road or getting on the airplane or whatever. Like, I truly love my family and love being with my family. And so I took this opportunity, because I'm driving back and I had some extra time. I'm going to come up through the Blue Ridge Parkway, and I'm going to drive up through the Blue Ridge Parkway and take some time to myself, see some sights, stop in nature. And let me tell you, man, once the wheels started turning, you know, I'm on the road and I'm having all these kind of thoughts that show up that haven't showed up in a while. You know, thoughts like, dude, I bet they're thinking about how they're going to fire you before you get back to work. Yeah, this is what's coming up, right, in my mind. And at the same time, I've got this element, like, I don't even want, you know what, I don't think I want to go to AA meetings anymore. I don't even feel like it. I just want to be left alone. Just want to be by myself. Look at this broad universe. There's many things I could do, right? So the wheels are turning, and one thing I've learned over the years is to become the observer. You know, and so while I was doing this little drive back, I recognized the thinking that's showing up, right? And I was able to sit back and observe the thinking that's happening and not fall into it. You know, and kind of get a gauge of where I'm at and what's going on with me spiritually, emotionally. You know, I sat and some waterfalls down near Asheville, North Carolina, along the parkway, and I spent some time in meditation, and I had a really good experience doing that. And you know, on my way back up, I got to somewhere in Virginia. I don't remember where it is, but I was at this point, I was ready. I'm like, you know what, let's get to the meeting. You know, I spent some time, you know, with my thoughts and what was happening, and it's pouring rain. It's torrential rain. I get into this town in Virginia, and I think it's all worked out, because it's like, all right, I looked up this meeting. It's 8:00. Looks like I got 15 minutes to get there. I'm close. So I make my way there, and I get there, and there's nobody there. And I'm like, damn it. You know, but it's okay. It was okay. You know, when I came back here and I had a little bit of a different perspective on where I'm at and what I need to do. You know, I spoke to my sponsor briefly about it, and I spoke to some of my friends about it. I was like, you know, is some of this the result of the experience emotionally with what happened with the funeral and my grandfather, or you know, what do I need to do here? You know, why are these fears coming back up? Is what's happening? I had some fears coming back up. I don't know. Fear of what's going to happen. Fear of where I'm going to be. Fear of not being good enough. Fear of the future. All this stuff started to mingle back up, and I'm like, gosh, I don't like that. I don't like to live in that. I don't like it. I don't like it being there. And I know that it comes, and it's okay. But see, here's the thing about a guy like me in the past, in my experience. These kind of thoughts come. Someone comes up and asks me, how you doing? I say, great. Good, everything's good. I wasn't having those thoughts. They weren't there. I used to do the old, well, you shouldn't be thinking that way, so you know better. So we don't need to talk about it. Just get to a meeting, go help somebody, do the right thing. You know, pride is huge for me. I recognize it says in the 12 and 12 that pride is one of our biggest defects of character. And be able to recognize it and showing up and be able to show up and talk to people about, you know, maybe things aren't perfect. Maybe some of this stuff in the disease and in the thoughts and maybe being a little bit spiritually disconnected, maybe it's showing up and it's okay. Because if I don't talk about it, there's no way I'm going to get through it. They talk about humility and you know, the sixth and seventh step have been kind of the primary focus of some things over the last year. And I'm the guy that likes to experience humility the hard way when I absolutely have to. Or am I going to be the guy who wants to seek some humility when I know it's beneficial towards me? Can I be okay with it? Can I talk about stuff that's going on? Can I talk about these crazy thoughts like, here's a thought that comes up, right? Financial men suck. Yeah, I worked through my men's, but I've done so much financial damage that I've been paying on things for years, and I'm like, I don't see any end in sight. So I'll get a thought that goes, well, why don't you go over to the casino? Yeah. Right? You know this thought? All right, he knows this thought. Put in a couple of dollars, maybe you'll win a few hundred, and then you can pay off that amends and that bill that you owe, right? It's got good motives behind it. This is the kind of thinking that shows up in a guy like me. And I'll act on it if I don't talk about it. You know? It's kind of where I'm at today, and I sat down and I've been and doing some more writing and some looking into my 10th and 11th step and being more conscious of sharing it with my friends on a daily basis. Because I live with the people that originally got me to get to stay sober. I still live with them. I see them every day. There's no escaping them. You know, I see them when I get up in the morning. I see them at work. You know? And I'm fortunate or unfortunate, I'm not sure. I work in an industry where we help sick and suffering alcoholics and addicts. Some of you may know what that is. And I had all these ideas when I first ran into this job, right? You know, and so working in treatment I can always remember some of the first thing that somebody said to me was, this is not your recovery. This will not keep you sober. You know? And boy, were they right, man, you know? But the bonus side of it is, it's sink or swim. Like, what I mean by that is, you get into treatment and if it's, I always hear guys that are getting better or, you know, 5 days out of detox and the Suboxone's worn off and they say, I want to be a counselor. And I go, yeah, wow. You know, I don't know, you know, like they got this idea. And I had that idea when I showed up in there too. I thought this was going to be a miraculous thing. And nowadays, you know what? I don't know why God has me where he has me. I don't know why. You know, I've given up trying to pretend to think I know why God has me where I am. But I'll tell you what, man, every single defect of character that I have was tested. And is still tested on a daily basis. And some of the people I work with are sicker than the people that show up, I think. You know? And I can say that, I don't care, I tell them to their face. And, you know, it's a beautiful environment because I get to work around recovering people that are all in recovery and we're trying to do the right thing, help people, and, you know, trying to be non-judgmental and plant the seed in people who, you know, I've seen plenty of people show up in AA over the years that have no desire to really want to do this, but something changes and something snaps and something just switches and I can't call it. I can't call it. You know, so, and it's been a beautiful experience, and it's a very tough job, because I'm not like, if you know me, like, being out front and in front of people and speaking to people and being in crowds and all that stuff is really not my thing. Like, I don't like people. Like, I don't like being around people. I'm such a, my fear of people and what they think of me is huge, so being in front of people and having to do groups and having to speak, like, it drives me crazy. You know, and being assertive is another thing that I suffered with. Telling you what to do, how to do it, you know, without thinking that, you know, you might be mad at me and not like me, or, you know, God forbid, spit in my face or something like that. You know, and all these challenges I've gone through over the years have kind of conditioned and changed things in my character. And I'm thankful for that. And it's like I said, it was a sink or swim. I've seen people sink, you know, thinking that being in that kind of environment is going to be something that's going to help them stay clean and sober. You know, but I get an opportunity to be of service, and you know, my prayer meditation every day is you know, because if you're not an alcoholic like myself, I wake up with me. There, and sometimes the me that's there, like, I rush to try to get a cup of coffee in before it starts talking, you know, my head starts talking, that's my head. But I could wake up on any given day and my first thoughts that come out are, you're a loser, man. What are you doing with yourself? You know, did you see your friends, man? They bought a new house, a new car, they got lots of money, right? Why don't you go back and get a degree? You know, like, the thoughts start coming. So my prayer and meditation in the morning is key. And I talk a lot about 10-11, I guess, because it's huge for me. Like, prayer and meditation has become a big thing for me. And sometimes I'm really strong with doing it consistently, and sometimes I'm not. But waking up and getting to a place where I can try to put myself to be of service. Instead of waking up on a daily basis thinking about what can I get out of today? How am I going to get here? How am I going to do that? How am I going to get a promotion, right? I work with people. That's all they think about is they're going to get a promotion, yeah. Whatever it takes. You know, how am I going to be helpful? How am I going to be a better son? Have I called my mother lately? Talked to her? My father? How am I going to be a better brother? How am I going to be a better coworker? How am I going to be a better boss? Can you imagine that? They made me, put me in a position to tell people what to do. It's fun. It's actually a bad position to be in. You're the blame guy, you know. But this becomes part of my ritual in life. And I can start out a day and I can begin to come at it with my day with what I'm going to bring. How am I going to be I figured out something. I mean, it was all figured out already, because if you read the big book and you go through it many times and you sit with people and go through it many times, you'll see some things in there. And one of the key important things in there that I see and that pops out for me sometimes is, how are you going to fit yourself to be of maximum service to God and his fellow man today? Not how are you going to fit yourself to be of maximum service to Steve. Because I can do both, you know. And sometimes I'll start out my day like that, and it's all well. I get in 5 minutes later, somebody comes up and says, hey, if you, I'm out of here, you have to. And it's all gone. But it's important. You know, a design for living that works. You know, and even though I feel kind of out of place and off tune right now and not where I normally feel, it's okay. It's okay because I know it'll pass. I know I can't sit around and do nothing and expect it to just go by. I've learned that action and action and more action, you know, is required. But, you know, I'm glad. I'm glad I'm experiencing what I'm experiencing right now. I'm grateful. Does that sound strange? It doesn't sound strange to me because, you know, I don't know about you guys, when I first came around, gratitude meetings, right? You guys get to any gratitude meetings? I hated them, right? The people that come into it, you know, the people that, even the newcomers, I hated gratitude meetings. People are so grateful about stuff. I'm grateful. And even I was grateful. I mean, look, I was more maybe thankful than grateful. Let's just put it that way. Because I had heard gratitude was an action word, and I didn't quite understand what they meant by that. But I was thankful. I was thankful I had a job. I was thankful I had a place to sleep. I was thankful I had some money in my pocket. I was thankful I had some friends. And I was thankful my family still cared about me. I was thankful for a lot of things. But realistically, that was about it. I was glad I had stuff. I didn't understand the gratitude that shows up when you have this experience that comes through you, where gratitude shows up in the fact that I'm grateful to have these things and I am so willing to do something about it to show you that I'm grateful. I show up to meetings more now, and my gratitude in showing up at meetings is to have an ability to be able to be of service and maybe help somebody. Not that I'm here so I can get my medicine and feel better and walk out, because that's how it used to be. I mean, you know, I come here, I get my medicine, I leave. You know, things have changed in this essence of how I feel about gratitude. You know, I'm grateful for my family, so I try to do the best I can to show up for them. Actually send them birthday cards and shit like that. You know, I'm that guy that's so selfish and self-centered. When it came around to the calendar of birthdays, I don't know. I don't even know who you are and what you like, really, what you're into. I gotta send a card. You know what we do? We go to the store, you get one of them gift cards, right? $15, $20, here you go. I didn't care. I didn't want to care. It was painful to do that. It was like painful to be. I had no gratitude. You know, gratitude has showed up in a different way for me. You know, and when I say I'm grateful that I'm experiencing a little bit of pain and suffering right now, it's because I know that my only growth that I've ever had in my recovery has been through pain and suffering. When I'm doing good and feeling good and my ego is boosted up and I'm on top of the world and life is just, I get up and smile at the sun and like all my successes, my promotions at work, all that stuff that makes you feel good, it's a good thing. Like, I really don't get as much out of that as I've gone through hard times. Whether spiritually, emotionally, physically, any of the above. Because in hindsight, having looked back, the tough things that I was able to get through, whether I was suffering in one way, shape, or form, whether it was I didn't have a job, I didn't know what I was going to do, I didn't have any money. The world comes to an end right there, right? I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. The girlfriend left me and I'm alone. I just don't want to live anymore. Life is never going to be good again. Like, out of these experiences, having walked through with hand in hand with people, staying close to my people in AA, my friends, my sponsors, my network, and getting through this stuff, writing inventory, doing prayer and meditation, man, you know, when I was able to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and his fellow man, things tend to work themselves out. And I get to see what has become a result of it in growth in hindsight, not in the middle of it. You know, I look back at experiences I've had that I thought were terrible. How am I going to get through this? And doors opened and different things happened and people showed up in my life and stuff that, you know, if I was trying to get my hands in and control, it wouldn't have happened the way it happened. You know, so I'm grateful. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the painful experiences that we get to go through. Hey man, when I was drinking and doing what I was doing, I didn't feel those things. Except when alcohol stopped working, then it, I don't know, if you drank like me, you know, alcohol was really a solution. Alcohol was really kind of a thing that brought me to life. Alcohol was really, in hindsight through my experiences looking at it, what brought me to be able to be right here, right now, with you, with whoever was around me, most of the time, not all the time. And I could just be okay. I ain't worried about yesterday or tomorrow. I'm right here, right now. I'm able to be with you. Alcohol did something for me. Then it stopped. Then it just became maintenance and painful. Just a way to get up and have to try to function. Can't have a conversation without having some booze. You know, and the thing that's missing when alcohol is gone is I go back to that place where I don't know how to be present, really. I don't know how to live in today. I don't know how to stay here. Untreated, I'm worried about what's going to happen next week, next year, what about my life? How am I going to figure this out? I got to get somewhere. I got to do something. The restless dog, right? Keeps moving around, gets to a spot. That spot's good, but not good enough anymore. What's the next thing? That's how I feel untreated. You know, I know that feel. I hate that feeling. You know, and left untreated, left without the solution that these guys have brought and provided and so eloquently in our big book. To get a relationship with something greater than myself that can do for me what I can't do for myself, it's a beautiful thing. Can't do it 100% all the time. Wish could. But it's been the most beautiful thing in my life. I'm glad I got to live to be able to experience. To finally get to experience some life. You know, I've had better times in my sobriety. I've had more fun, more valuable times with friends and people and family in my sobriety than I had good times when I was drinking. And I had some good times when I was drinking. I'm not one of those guys that'll come up here and tell you that it was crap. I had a lot of fun when it was working. But the fun and enjoyment and fulfillment that I've gotten in sobriety and being able to feel whole and feel at peace a lot of times is a beautiful thing. Something I've been seeking since I was a young kid, and I didn't know it when I first put that drink to my lips. I didn't know what was going to transpire because I was a restless little bastard. You know, I was the ADD kid, you know, the ones they put on Ritalin. You can't sit still, seeking attention. Everybody pay attention to me. You need to, you know, right. My mom blamed herself for my alcoholism. She said, we put you on that medication, and I found out that most kids that go on that medication turn out to be alcoholics or addicts. And I said, Mom, did you ever consider the fact that I might have been an alcoholic or addict before you put me on that medication? Yeah. It's possible. It's possible. But I'm glad you guys invited me down here tonight. I'm glad it's a small crowd of people. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. That's all I got for you. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.